The T-Biz podcast delivers tea news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Each year, the T-Biz portal publishes the State of the Tea Industry Forecast, a forward-looking assessment of production, pricing, trade, and demand. We invite tea professionals across the value chain to review the findings and contribute their perspective. Your insights help refine the forecast before it is finalized on March 1st.
Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. Heat wave warning. El Nino becomes tea's climate stress test. Nepal tea factories reopen after 3 weeks, but export risk remains. And tea availability is not deliverability. Plus, Vietnam changing perceptions. Vietnam has long been a major force in the global tea trade, but rarely the center of conversation. As demand grows for specialty tea, matcha, and origin-driven products, Vietnamese producers are investing in quality, processing, and identity. Today's guest is Tri Nguyen, CEO of TeaCusp. His mission is simple but ambitious: change global perceptions of Vietnamese tea while improving opportunities for the farmers who produce it. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Keilani Valley, Telawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia tea estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
Western Europe is sweltering this week, and the tea trade should pay attention. More than a dozen European countries have faced high-level heat warnings. Bordeaux pushed into extreme triple-digit heat. Geneva opened cooling options for seniors. France, Spain, Italy, Germany, Switzerland, Belgium, and the United Kingdom have all seen disruption to schools, transport, public events, outdoor work, and energy systems. This is not just a European weather story, however. It's a tea story. Europe has been warming faster than any other continent. Heat waves are arriving earlier, growing stronger, and becoming more disruptive. This week's heat has already affected French nuclear power output because the river water used for cooling is too warm or too scarce. That matters because energy strain translates into factory logistics and retail cost, as well as consumer stress. At the same time, El Nino has returned to the tropical Pacific. NOAA reports that El Nino conditions are present and expected to strengthen throughout the Northern Hemisphere winter. Earlier this month, WMO warned that the probability of El Nino emerging this summer was high. El Nino doesn't explain every heat wave. It does not create the same weather everywhere. But it does tilt the odds towards abnormal conditions. Drought in some regions, floods in others, hotter growing seasons, weaker or delayed rains, and greater uncertainty in agricultural production. Tea is highly exposed to that uncertainty. The tea bush requires reliable rainfall, moderate temperatures, humidity drainage, and predictable seasonal growth. Too little rain slows the flush. Too much rain disrupts plucking and damages roots. High heat stresses both the bushes and workers. Dry conditions encourage pests such as red spider mites. Intense storms trigger erosion, landslide, road closures, and factory delays like we saw in Sri Lanka last year. Assam, Darjeeling, Sri Lanka, Kenya, and other tea-growing regions are already living with this pattern. Climate volatility is no longer a future risk. It's now an operating condition. The commercial impact is clear. Weather volatility becomes yield volatility. Yield volatility becomes auction volatility. Auction volatility becomes margin pressure for packers, brands, retailers, and food service buyers. quality also becomes less predictable. The seasonal teas are harder to schedule. Small holders absorb risk first, but the cost eventually moves throughout the entire supply chain. There's also a demand side twist. Europe's heat reduces traditional hot tea consumption at times while increasing demand for iced tea, cold brew, herbal infusions, hydration products, and ready-to-drink formats. That creates a paradox. Climate stress can damage supply while pushing customers towards new tea formats that require reliable sourcing of ingredients. Business insight. The implication for tea professionals is direct. Buyers need to diversify origin risk. Producers need to invest in climate adaptation, drought-tolerant cultivars, shade, soil health, water retention, erosion control, pest monitoring, and worker heat protection. Brands need to prepare consumers for more volatility in pricing, time, and seasonal quality. The strategic issue is no longer whether climate change will affect tea. It already does. The question is whether the industry can move fast enough from reaction to resilience. Nepal's tea factories are reopening, but the country's export crisis is not yet resolved. Tea processors in Yapa and Ilam shut down after India tightened import procedures for Nepali tea. The disruption began on May 1st when India's Tea Board introduced a new standard operating procedure requiring laboratory testing for every contingent entering India. Producers say the process caused a 15-day delay in test results and a fee of 11,500 rupees per truck. Exports were halted for 3 weeks. Indian authorities later agreed to random sampling, but exporters say the problem returned when samples were collected from warehouses and shipments were told to wait for test reports before moving. The impact was severe. Nearly 100 factories were closed forcibly. More than 100,000 workers and 30,000 farmers were directly affected. Losses were estimated around 20 million rupees per day. Now, after government assurances, factories are reopening. Industry representatives say 30 CTC factories in Yapa resumed operations Thursday, and factories in the Hill districts were expected to restart within a day or two. But the reason for reopening is important. Factories are not reopening because the export problem remains unsolved. They are reopening because fresh green leaf must be processed. If the leaf is left unplucked or unprocessed, farmers lose income immediately and quality deteriorates quickly. Processed tea may still need to remain in warehouses until export procedures become predictable. Nepal's government has formed a high-level task force through the Prime Minister's Secretariat that includes officials from several ministries and agencies such as finance, home affairs, foreign affairs, agriculture, customs, food technology, quality control, standards, and metrology, as well as the National Tea and Coffee Development Board. The group has 2 weeks to recommend immediate, medium-term, and long-term solutions. This is the right direction, but it's only a first step. Nepal's tea crisis is not simply about India. It's about dependence. Nepal produces more than 20 million kilograms of CTC and about 6.5 million kilograms of orthodox tea each year. Much of that 27 million kilos of tea depends on India as a market, a transit route, or a commercial gateway. That gives India practical leverage. It also exposes Nepal to recurring border friction, testing delays, and pressure from India tea interests, especially in West Bengal. The lesson is clear. Nepal needs stronger testing capability, credible certification, traceability, origin protection, and direct access to global buyers. Nepali tea is of high quality. The challenge is building the trust infrastructure to match that quality. Business insight. The reopening is not the end of Nepal's tea crisis. It is a pause in an emergency. The strategic work now is to make Nepali tea less dependent on a single border and more accessible to the world. At auction, tea may appear available. Kenya may report strong demand. Colombo may have volume. Buyers may have orders in hand. But in the current market, that does not mean the tea can move smoothly from origin to destination. Kenya is the clearest example. The Mombasa auction remains central to the global black tea trade, but shifts in stock levels, routing, and destination risk are redefining availability. Africa Intelligence reports that Kenya tea has continued to flow into Port Sudan despite a long-running blockade and embargo. That tells us two things. First, the trade adapts when inventories build, and second, alternative routes are not frictionless. They can add cost, delay, insurance risk, payment risk, and uncertainty. Sri Lanka faces a similar challenge from a different angle. Ceylon tea is available, but Sri Lanka's heavy exposure to Middle Eastern markets makes logistics unusually sensitive to geopolitical disruption. When shipping lanes are unstable, when war risk premiums rise, or when buyers in key destinations slow purchases, tea at auction does not automatically become tea delivered. Now add U.S. tariff uncertainty. The U.S. Trade Representative has proposed new Section 301 duties tied to the enforcement of forced labor import controls. The proposed tariff rates are 10% for some economies and 12.5% for others, including several important tea origins and processing hubs. These duties are not yet final, but they matter now because contracts, pricing, and sourcing decisions are being made today. For importers, the takeaway is practical. Do not ask only, is the tea available? Ask, can it ship? Can it clear? What route will it take? What will insurance cost? What tariff applies? And can the final customer absorb the landed price? For U.S.-bound tea, plan each scenario by origin. China, Japan, India, Sri Lanka, Vietnam, Taiwan, and Bangladesh all deserve close review. The tariff headline is only one part of the risk. The larger issues, uncertainty. In this market, success belongs to buyers who manage the entire chain from the auction hammer to the warehouse floor. Tea on offer has value, but only delivered tea has commercial value. Business insight. The logistics lesson for tea buyers is simple. Availability is not the same as deliverability. The Week 19 Tea Price Report for the period ending May 8th is sponsored by the East Africa Tea Trade Association, EATTA, owners of the Mombasa Tea Auction since 1956. Tea markets closed Week 19 with the global tea trade still operating in a disciplined, highly selective pricing environment. Across the major auction centers, buyers remained active but cautious, with quality continuing to determine realization levels more decisively than broad volume demand. In Sri Lanka, stronger competition persisted for cleaner, high-grown, well-manufactured teas, while secondary descriptions continued to encounter resistance. North India maintained a firmer tone overall, particularly for dependable liquoring teas suited to blending and export programs. Mombasa remained orderly rather than aggressive, with buyers concentrating on consistent manufacture and value. Indonesia continued trading with a tighter orthodox focus structure where smaller catalogs were amplifying quality effects. In Colombo, prices averaged $3.24 per kilo this week, up 3 cents versus the previous week. In North India, prices averaged $1.93 per kilo this week, up by 4 cents per kilo versus the last reported week. In Mombasa, prices averaged $2.23 a kilo, which was unchanged from the previous week, sale 18. In Indonesia, prices averaged $2.43 per kilogram this week, up 2 cents per kilogram versus the prior benchmark, reflecting improved support for orthodox teas and a tighter available supply. The broader market structure remained unchanged. Buyers continued to prioritize execution quality and blend reliability, while exporters remained disciplined because freight, financing, and energy costs continued to support pricing floors across the major origins. The result is a market that remains stable at the headline level, but increasingly differentiated beneath the surface. Premium manufacturers continue to maintain pricing integrity, while secondary teas face wider dispersion and more selective demand. That's the Tea Price Report for week 19. Subscribe for free to the Tea Briz newsletter on LinkedIn for a detailed regional breakdown, six-month trade signals, and a near-term outlook for quarter two pricing dynamics. And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hello, I'm Bogdan, a passionate tea drinker and the inventor of the ultimate tea machine, the Brewmaker One. Preparation is key to making fine tea. Sequential steepings deliver the best taste possible and unlock the true value of whole leaf teas and botanicals. Brew automates that process without using any pots or capsules. This simple-to-operate smartphone-controlled device stores steeping profiles to consistently make great tea at the push of a button. Brew also reduces time, waste, and energy. That's because I engineered the brew to remember control settings for temperature, brewing time, and quantity. Using my patented process lets you stack steeps simply and conveniently.
Vietnam has long been a major force in the global tea trade, but rarely the center of conversation. As demand grows for specialty tea, matcha, and origin-driven products, Vietnamese producers are investing in quality, processing, and identity. Today's guest is Tri Nguyen, CEO of Teacusp. His mission is simple but ambitious: change global perceptions of Vietnamese tea while improving opportunities for the farmers who produce it. Vietnam has long been a volume player in tea, but that's changing. As demand shifts towards origin, clarity, and craft, a new generation is redefining what Vietnamese tea can be and how it's valued. Today's guest is Tri Nguyen, the CEO of Teacusp. Tri represents a new generation of Vietnamese tea makers, one rooted in heritage, but intent on redefining how the world understands Vietnam as an origin. A second generation producer, he has spent decades in tea alongside his family, building vertically integrated operations that include organic farming and certified production systems. His mission is explicit: change global perceptions of Vietnamese tea while improving farmer livelihoods. Through the Canadian-based Teacusp, he is blending traditional Vietnamese tea culture with modern processing discipline and market awareness, positioning Vietnam not as a low-cost supplier, but as a producer of expressive, origin-driven teas. Tri, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me, and it's good to see you again.
Vietnam has been defined by bulk production. What's actually changing now?
You know, for decades, Vietnam was optimized for throughput. The system rewarded kilos per hectare, fast turnover and uniformity for blending. And in my point of view, what changes now is not marketing, is intent at the farm and factory level. A new generation of producers is taking different questions when they think about tea. What if they stop blending cultivars, right? What if they process for expression instead of stability? And this structural shift from commodity thinking to origin thinking. So you can see this in three ways: cultivar separation, farmers who used to harvest and pulls everything. Now keep the PH1, like Kim Tuyen, you know, Shan Snow separates because they have seen bias reward characters. You know, processing knowledge over machinery. 10 years ago, investments meant bigger rollers and dryers. And today it's been learning with her control, oxidation, timing, Q-crane precision, and drying curves. And it's willingness to sacrifice yield for quality. So a real example I see is this loss of previously is when anonymously into bulk green tea export are now, you know, lightly pan-fried, carefully dry, packed as single origin, single cultivar tea, and sold to special tea buyers who evaluate on taste, not price per kilo.
What do buyers still get wrong, and what changes their mind?
The biggest assumption buyers still have is Vietnam can make tea cheaply, but not beautifully. And the conversation often starts with skepticism. You know, so what changes in their mind is never a slideshow, but it's always a tasting. So when a buyer tastes a Vietnamese tea with me, it's normally we discuss about the clarity, you know, natural sweetness, you know, structure, clean finish, and that they did not expect, you know, from Vietnam. And you can see the exact moment, you know, perception shifts. And the questions change, you know, from, you know, what's your price to how did you make this? What cultivar is this? And, you know, can you repeat this lot? So that's a transition from supplier to producer in their mind. And that shift is happening more frequently now than ever before.
Give a moment where you saw that shift happen.
Yes. This actually happened last year. I got one of my, is now just my long-term client. He told me the first time when I just brought the tea to his store, and he said that I know Vietnamese tea very well. Right. I drank it before, and it was not very, very good. And I asked him, so when did you drink it? He said, 20 years ago. I'm like, oh, so, you know, that was quite some time. And because, so you didn't drink my tea 20 years ago. Maybe you drank it somebody else's tea. You know, we got, you know, this tea, you know, from our tea gardens, and you know, we improve our technique, and so, you know, so I told him, you know, let's just, you know, sit down and we just drink the tea together, because, you know, so I believe that, you know, we have some values that we share together, and you know, tea is also present conviviality. So, you know, if you don't like the tea that I have today, then, you know, we just drink the tea, talk about life, and then we move on with that. And so he gave me a chance, and we enjoyed the tea together, and he asked me the question, this, you sure this Vietnamese tea? Did you make it in Vietnam, and what cultivar is that? So, you know, throughout this discussions, and he's became more perceptive, receptive with a get. He asked for more samples, right now he's been carrying my tea and to share with his clients, and he is one of the strategic clients, also a friend that's been working alongside with me to promote the uniqueness and the improvements that Vietnamese tea has, you know, in the last few years, and more to come.
What's driving matcha growth right now?
Is the intersections of global demand, our farmers, economy, and the fast processing adaptation. So with the global demands outpacing Japan's the rise of matcha in beverages, you know, so RTD, supplements, and food manufacturing has gone far beyond what Japan can supply at accessible price points. And buyers are looking for credible and scalable alternatives. So from the farmers' economics, matcha allows utilizations of leaf grains that historically has very low values in orthodox market. You know, suddenly right now, a larger leaf, slight cosmetic defects, I would say, mechanical harvest can be turned into high values ingredients after milling. So that's transformational for farm profitability. Processing capabilities is improving rapidly and significantly. You know, grinding, sifting, and producing techniques have improved in the last 5 to 7 years. But here's the key. Many producers know how to make powder, in this case matcha, but fewer know how to grow leaves specifically for matcha. So that's where the industry is still evolving, you know, with shade management, nitrogen feeding for amino acids, block standards for tensile styles material, or even the decision between steam and hand fired before milling.
Why build matcha capability in China?
China currently provides three things Vietnam is still building. First is deep experience growing leaf specifically for grinding. The second is established tensile style processing knowledge. And the third one is skilled labor trained in discipline required for high-grade matcha. And these are not things that you learn from equipment. They come from years of practice. Right? They come from experience. So rather than waiting 10 to 15 years for Vietnam to develop this organically, the decision was for my company was learn where the knowledge already exists and then bring it back and adapt it. The longer term goal is not for, Vietnam to compete in this premium matcha section. It is, you know, for, you know, Vietnam to express the matcha in its own way. Right, and you know, crowd in its terroir, you know, cultivars and farming reality. As our goals right now is learn from China is not about catching up or imitating. You know, it is about understanding the sibling behind leaf preparation, shading, steaming, and milling. So that's when this knowledge is brought back to Vietnam, it can be reinterpreted through Vietnamese material. You also don't have to follow step to arrive at the same place. So, you know, you first import knowledge and then you let local condition reshape it. And that is the result of, you know, not a copy of what already exists. You know, it is something that only comes from Vietnam. And that's also aligned with our long-term mission and purposes, you know, of our company.
Where does Vietnam win today?
It's going to be oolong. You know, so we have had a long history in oolong producing. We'll have expertise and we have been developing our technique and the way that we produce oolong with our own cultivars. It's true that the Taiwanese, you know, brought it's oolong cultivar to Vietnam, and then with the developments of these oolongs industry, especially in Vietnam, that's thanks to the Taiwanese. Then we have young generations who want to implement and, integrate, their own characters and, their own Vietnamese pride and expertise in making oolong. So we already have knowledge. We already have expertise, we have history, we have tradition, and that definitely oolong going to have to change people's perceptions about specialty tea in Vietnam rather than using matcha, because matcha is recent. As I know that, we were talking about the shortage of to match us in the world right now. So that's why, Vietnam can play a small role in it, to support the demand of the world, right? But with what we already have, oolong is going to be the key and the main tool that we're going to use to bring Vietnamese tea to the world stage.
Can Vietnam scale that?
In terms of volumes, we can do a lot. Last year, so our family alone, we produced up to 587 tons of oolong. But for the countries as a whole, I would say we're going to be in the 100,000 tons, per year. It's a big number.
What defines Vietnamese oolong?
I would say that's going to be our high mountain oolong.
Okay.
The oolong that we have been sharing with the world right now is something that we make from our own gardens. The altitudes of our garden is about 800 to 1,100 meters above sea level. We use the cultivar, Kim Tuen, to make that oolong. It is a light oxidized one. The characteristics, that a lot of people compare with Alishan from Taiwan. When I bring the product, to see the tea lovers, so I don't compare it with any tea from around the world. So we got this tea made from our own garden, right? And it's a light oxidized oolong. And when you remove all of the bias about a certain characteristic of some certain high-end oolongs, people start to appreciate more. They talk about the aftertaste, they talk about, its fragrance, right? It's how many infusions it can do, right? Well, why don't we experiment with this, instead of doing 100 degrees Celsius, let's try to do 70, let's try to do 80, and to see that, how the tea is going to react to a different temperature and, what kind of characters. And, how it's gonna perform, right? And so far, we have had a lot of positive feedback about the high mountain oolong. It's also the one that I share with all of my friends and family and clients last Christmas, as a personal gift. And I believe you have one small tint of that also. Right now, we're talking about that specific oolong, from your personal experience without knowing, is it Vietnamese tea? How would you describe that oolong? Is it that something you find as is unique in its own way? It has its own, characters, and it's Vietnamese oolong tea.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of Tea Biz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the Tea Biz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.